Well, this is the beginning of the new year. It's 2010. Well, last year we worked through one of the epistles of John. And so it's time to start something new. So this year, I picked the gospel account of Mark. It's the shortest of the gospels. I think it's 16 chapters. And it is believed to be the first gospel account that was written. Now, for much of the Christian era, it was believed that Matthew was written first and that Mark was an abridgment of Matthew. But as scholarship improved and additional manuscripts, different, more evidence of early church fathers came to light, it was the conclusion generally accepted by most now is that Mark was the first one that was written, and that Matthew and Luke based their gospel accounts on Mark, using Mark as one of the primary sources. They fashioned their gospels after Mark. Now, Mark was the author, but he obviously was not one of the disciples, or one of the closest disciples of Jesus. And so, where did Mark get all of his information? We believe that Mark accompanied Peter on many of his journeys. Accompanied Peter, Mark was present when Peter gave his sermons. Mark was there when Peter related of his experience in his life that he had with Jesus. And so, you might call the book of Mark the memoirs of Peter. Peter, as I think most of us know, from the records that were left behind of Peter's life, is he was kind of an impetuous person who acted first and then fought later, or who said something first and then thought about it later. And it appears that Mark, probably somewhat younger than Peter, was also of a similar personality. And so I guess in that regard they got along fairly well. But John was was his Hebrew name, the Jewish name, and Mark was the Greek name. Both very common names. John Mark got along pretty well with Peter, but apparently not well with Paul, who was more of a cerebral person who thought things through. But we know that they didn't get along because Mark, for whatever reason, maybe didn't really give it much thought, decided not to accompany Paul, or decided to leave Paul on one of his missionary journeys, returned home. And then on the next one, Barnabas, once again thought, Mark would be a good choice, but Paul and Mark didn't quite get along at that point. But what's interesting is that they apparently reconciled their differences, because towards the end of Paul's life, as he was sitting in prison, he asked Mark to come back because he would be useful to him in his ministry. The gospel account of Mark is not a biography of Jesus. There are biographical elements, but as I said, it's mostly a memoir, memories about Jesus. But memories about Jesus for a specific audience, in a specific context. Scholars now believe that this gospel account was written sometime around AD 50 to AD 65, right around the time of one of the major Roman persecutions. It's when Nero was emperor, and during part of that time, if you recall history, Rome burned down, and it was suspected that Nero himself was responsible for it. But to kind of deflect the blame, he singled out this odd group called the Christians. And many were rounded up and they were used in their colosseums, the arenas, as both kind of to fight wild beasts, as well as to, some were doused in oil and used to light the nighttime games. They were used as human torches. And we're not entirely certain if this account was written before or after. Some scholars say it was written before all of that happened. Some scholars say it was written after all of that happened. But in any case, the atmosphere surrounding the Christians at that time was not exactly, shall we say, peaceful. Either they had encountered persecution already, severe ones, or there were threats of persecutions already looming in the horizon. So it was written to Roman Christians, predominantly Gentiles, because in the Gospel of Mark, many of the Jewish practices and customs are explained. So it was written in circumstances of conflict and persecution. And we see that Mark records in his Gospel, one of the themes is that of conflict. And how Jesus was frequently in conflict. Why was it written? It was primarily written as a pastoral encouragement to the persecuted believers in Rome. But it was written to show that you don't have to feel alone when you're being persecuted, because Jesus too went through conflicts. He went through persecutions. In fact, he went through the crucifixion, and yet he persevered and he came through, and God was with him all the way through. And so it was written as an encouragement. It was also written to explain what discipleship means. Throughout the Gospel of Mark, the disciples are actually presented in a rather negative light. They're presented as misunderstanding. And they're presented as failing. And so, in one sense, Christians, and all of us are included, are expected to somewhat identify with that. We don't know it all. We're not going to get it all right. But that's okay. As long as we continue to walk with Christ, as long as we continue in that desire to be with Christ, God will be with us and will walk with us, will lift us up, will encourage us, and will give us understanding. Mark's Gospel, unlike the other three Gospel accounts, is predominantly one of stories of action. Jesus doing things. things. There is very little in the way of sermons that are recorded. Mark records more miracles in his gospel than the others. Mark wanted to show Jesus in action. What does discipleship look like? What does Christianity look like? In his account, he uses descriptive words. He uses a lot of adjectives. He paints vivid scenes. And a lot like some modern television shows and movies. No, he doesn't dwell on a single scene very long, but he cuts scenes. He goes from one scene to another in rapid fire action. The story or the event that dominates Mark's gospel is the account of the Passion. The week leading up to the crucifixion and the crucifixion itself. It forms about a third of the 16 chapters of Mark. Everything that Mark writes leads up to that climax. And all through it, and another of the themes of Mark in his gospel is to show Jesus as a servant. What does it look like to be a servant? The gospel according to Mark begins in verse 1, chapter 1. Chapter 1, verse 1. The beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. If you notice, there is no verb in that first verse. Some of the more, modern natural language translations do include a verb. For example, the New Living Translation translates it this way: "This is the good news about Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God." But in the original language, there is no verb. It's just the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And translators, scholars believe that that verse is actually the title for either this section that follows, or actually most now believe that it functions as a title for the entire book. So this entire account can be seen as the beginning of the gospel. The beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And so that kind of begs the question, what about the rest of the gospel? Where's the rest of the gospel of Jesus Christ? This is the beginning, where's the rest? Well, what is the gospel? We were talking about this earlier in Sabbath school. What is the gospel? The gospel, the word translated gospel, comes from the word evangelion, from which we get the word evangelism. Gospel means the good news. So the gospel, good news, and evangelion, evangelism, are technically all the same. There should be no difference in how we understand the good news, the gospel, and evangelism. Mark qualifies the gospel as the gospel of Jesus Christ because at that time, the gospel, as I just mentioned, simply meant good news. Good news about what would be the next question a person would ask. It's the gospel of Jesus Christ. Is it the gospel about Jesus Christ, or the gospel, the good news that Jesus proclaimed? And the best answer is, it's both. Jesus Christ is good news, and Jesus Christ proclaimed good news. And so what Mark is going to record in his book is about Jesus, but it's also what Jesus did and Jesus taught. And just in case anyone was confused, because Jesus, or Yeshua, which is Joshua, was a fairly common name. He adds Jesus Christ. Christ is Messiah in Hebrew, Aramaic. So Jesus the Anointed One. And in case anyone was still unsure as to who Jesus Christ was by the narrowing and clarifying, he adds this little phrase, the Son of God. So this Jesus, who is the Anointed One, the Messiah, the Christ, is not just another human being, but is the Son of God. And so what follows in this Gospel is an account about Jesus, of Jesus, the Christ, the Son of God. To the Hebrews, the idea of a Gospel was not new. Now, to the Jews, it was not new. It was prophesied that someone would come to bring good news. Example is found in Isaiah chapter 40. Isaiah chapter 40 verse 9. And get you up to a high mountain, O Zion, herald of good news. Lift up your voice with strength, O Jerusalem, herald of good news. Lift up, lift it up, fear not, save the seas of Judah. Behold your God. So already back when Isaiah was writing, this good news, the Gospel, was going to be something proclaiming God. Something about God would arrive, bearing good news. Another example is found in Isaiah chapter 41, verse 27. I was the first to say to Zion, behold, here they are, and I give to Jerusalem a herald of good news. And also in chapter 52, verse 7. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him who bring good news, who publishes peace, who brings good news of happiness, who publishes salvation, who says to Zion, your God reigns. And I just want to turn to one final text here in Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 61. Isaiah 61 verses 1 through 3. This is what Jesus is recorded as saying towards the beginning of Luke. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are bound, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to grant to those who mourn in Zion, to give them a beautiful headdress instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the garment of praise instead of a faint spirit, that they may be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. That gives a context for how we are to define, how we are to understand good news, the Gospel, the Evangelion. It's the Gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. So, this is the beginning. Where is the rest? Where is the rest of the Gospel? And it appears that what Mark has intended is for his readers to, upon reaching the end of his writing, say to themselves, I am, we are, the rest of the gospel. That the gospel continues to be written. The gospel is not something that happened in the past, where it shouldn't be, but rather the gospel is something that continues to be written, that continues to occur today. That as each disciple of Jesus Christ strives to follow after him, to live the kind of life, the servant life that Jesus led, that the gospel continues to be written, that the good news continues to be proclaimed, and that the gospel continues to free those who are oppressed, to bring redemption and freedom to those who accept. So in this introductory sermon on the Gospel of Mark, that's what I would like each of us to leave with. That we are the gospel. That we are the present day gospel account. That as we live each day, we are writing the gospel. So, I think as we go through Mark's gospel, we will get a better picture of some of the details about what the gospel is, what the good news is, what it means, how the gospel is lived out. But for today, for this week, let's remind ourselves, let's remember that, you know, we are representing Christ, that how we live is the gospel.